a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
Welcome back to a special episode of the Cue It Up podcast, where we are going to talk all things improvement without actually playing the game. I am excited to be joined by Jennifer Bretta and some other weird, crazy guy that we couldn't get rid of.
And I'm excited to be joined by Jennifer Bretta, too. Can you tell?
Well, I'm excited to be joining both of you guys.
And Jennifer
well,
is going to...
Well, you and Nate already have some time together, I've heard. At the WSBA tournament.
Yes, yeah, we had a great time.
Did he show off his jumping skills?
Yeah, he did. He did. Yeah. I'm sure he told you all about it, and that's why you're asking.
I actually did not.
Oh, you didn't?
Oh, no.
I did not tell Rob anything that happened then. Jennifer is going to be joining us because who in the world has more knowledge of different kicking systems, banking systems? You learn these things like it's your job or something. It's incredible the amount of systems you have.
Well, yeah. I mean, I can think of probably a bunch of people in the world that know more than me about it. But as far as pool players go, I know a lot of kicking systems. I would say three cushion players probably know more. And, you know, there are a few pool players that really know the systems. A lot of them do it by feel. But, yeah, I did learn it like it was my job because it was my job.
Yeah. So... I figured you would be a great addition to the podcast this week, and you are happy to oblige. So I thank you for coming on again.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's going to be a lot of people who do not have access to a pool table now and will not have access to a pool table potentially for the foreseeable future. Obviously, we don't know anything about how long this kind of shutdown is going to last. I know in Wisconsin, all bars are closed. I know all pool halls, basically all gatherings of 10 or more people is shut down, and all businesses that are non-essential are shut down. I'm pretty sure that's the case also in New York. You guys were like that for a while, right, Jennifer?
Yeah. We've been shut down for 4 days now, 5 days now. I don't know. And tonight they're starting a curfew. Everybody, you can't really go out after 8 p.m. So it's getting a little crazy over here.
What burb are you in there?
I'm in Brooklyn.
You're in Brooklyn, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
you've been closed for a week, and you have how many tables and stuff? What's your room like?
We have 12 gold crown, 9-foot gold crowns. Three of them are tight. We have two heated Chevalot 5x10 billiard tables, and we have one diamond smart table bar box.
That is in the corner in the dark by itself because nobody likes it.
Yeah. We call that the coat rack.
The laundry changing table.
The billiard tables get play. And I you know, they get play early in the day on the weekends and stuff. And, you know, really we should probably get them out of there and put in pool tables because on the weekends we have overflow. We could use it. But I love the game. I like to use the tables. Customers are nice, but it's all about me, so they're staying. No.
That's
okay.
True.
No, well, that's a pretty good reason to keep them.
You know, Rob, you would have figured out all of this if you just listened to the podcast.
What are you saying now? What was that?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm off at three cushion land, and once you get there, buddy, you never go back.
Yeah. So back on topic, we don't know exactly how long this is going to last, and a lot of people have actually reached out to me personally through the podcast and in a lot of other ways, basically asking how we can give you advice to still improve your game, even though you might not even hit a ball for 3 to 4 months. So while it's obviously not ideal to go that long without hitting balls, there are still several ways that you can still improve your game, even if you aren't actually hitting balls and practicing your stroke and all that good stuff. So today we are going to do a top 10 or just, you know, 10 different ways that you can still improve your game. And I guess, yeah, use this as a constructive time because it's only a bad thing for your game if you do nothing for the next 3 months or however long this is going to last. It's only going to be a detriment to your game if you don't do anything with this time. So we can start it off with Jennifer. Would you like to kick us off with your first bit of advice?
My first item, yes. So when I first started playing, we didn't have, there was no information for pool on the internet. We didn't really have DVDs or anything like that. So I had to go to the bookstore and get books. And I will say that there are tons of great books about pool out there. Phil Capel writes, he wrote a bunch of them. And, you know, just like some old ones, like the 99 Critical Shots in Pool, just reading the books and really trying to understand the content is super helpful when you don't have access to a pool table because you're still learning.
Yeah, and I can echo that. This was one of mine as well. Full disclosure, we all wrote down separate ones, and we are going to just kind of wing it on how we work with this. So before we move on from that one, I do want to give my favorite book that I feel like I got the most from, and that was The Inner Game of Tennis by Timothy Galway. And it's obviously
great book.
Yes, it is not a book on pool, obviously. It has tennis right in the title, but it is applicable to the game of pool in a lot of different ways. And I'm not a huge reader. I enjoy reading. I just don't like to take the time to read, if that makes sense. But this book does give a huge insight into kind of just letting your mind work and getting out of its way, because it's a lot better at doing things than usually our conscious mind is most of the time. So that's
yeah.
It. Yeah.
I like Golf is Not a Game of Perfect too. That's a great, you know, they don't all have to be books about pool, especially when it's about the mental game.
For sure.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that.
All right. Rob, do you mind if I go next?
Nate, you can do anything you want. You're the editor-in-chief, buddy.
That's right. It is my show, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
So my first piece of advice is get a game plan. And what I mean by that is there is going to be a lot of time that you're going to have to really think about your game. You're going to have weaknesses, you're going to have strengths of your game, and you're going to have this ability to really, really structure your training routine so that when you do get back to the game, you're not just going and hitting balls like you've been doing the rest of your life. You actually are going to have the opportunity to structure your training when you get back to really address a lot of the weaknesses in your game and help get them to where they need to be. So my first piece of advice is just get a game plan for when you're able to hit balls again, that you're actually working on the things that you need to work. Really take a critical look at your game and dissect it down to what needs to be fixed and what is pretty good for where it's at.
Yeah, I had something like this too. Make a list of your faults, a to-do list, or like a list of, you know, drills, research drills, and put them in a notebook and have it ready for when you're ready to go. I had the same idea.
All right, Rob, did you want
to
take
you can take, you know, I'll just add to that. You can take, and what I like to think about is what I hate to do in pool. And that is a certain particular shot. We have shots that we kind of tend to stay away from. Well, that's the shot we need to shoot. We need to take that. We need to embrace the parts of the game that irritate us. And once you kind of do that, and that becomes part of your game, and you can do that mentally. How many times pool players, before they go to sleep at night, are rehashing in their head a particular solution to a problem they had in a game and where they made a mistake? And, of course, you may be successful 9 out of 10 times, but the one time you're not, that's what you're going to think about at bedtime. Why did I do that? How did that happen? Well, you kind of make a list of the things, the shots that you don't care for too much, that bother you. And you don't need to play to do that. You can have the list ready so the next time you go to play, you can iron those out. You can say, okay, I'm going to shoot this shot 50 times until I'm comfortable with it. Or like Jamie Barracks told me he does. Well, he shoots spot shots on a 9-foot table 200 in a row, or he does it over. Well, how many people do that? I mean, John Schmidt, maybe. I don't know too many others. That's, you know, I asked him, what do you do when you get to 192 and miss? He says, I start over.
That's a different level. But, I mean, you're right. Yeah. It's for me, it's kick shots. Jennifer, I don't want to speak for you, but I think for you, it's probably jump shots. Yep. And then Rob, it's for you, it's making balls. I mean, you know, you don't like to make balls. I don't like to kick balls. And Jennifer doesn't like to jump balls. You know, they're all things that we need to work on.
You know why?
I don't because like the white ball going in pockets.
I said, you know why I don't like to jump balls? Because I kick so well.
Ah.
Well, that's why I don't like the kickballs, because I jump so well.
Okay, so whatever. Okay.
So, Rob, why don't you take it away with the next one?
Well, yeah, just one comment about kicking. That match between Filler and Rannis this last race to 100, that it did show what kicking skills really are all about in that match, because they both did a pretty good job of it. Kicked brilliantly. In fact, what was that kick off the side pocket, nipple, two ball in the corner shot? You're down 20 games.
And that wasn't even the best shot that he made in that rack, because he jumped that next ball in and cut about a 60-degree cut on the three ball into the corner.
Jumped the three ball. I know. It was, I don't know, crazy stuff. Yeah. But anyhow, yeah, I think about virtual pool. And I think about it a lot at night when I'm sleepless, laying there, and I wake up and roll over. And I visualize in my mind what happens. And so you can take that. You don't need a pool table. You can remember that kind of stuff and take that to the table the next time you get there. The other thing, and Jennifer's going to like this because we talked about her loving systems and stuff. And since I started Three Cushion Billiards, I'm learning the different systems. And the one of the most valuable, besides the standard corner five system, which you can read up on, is the short rail, long rail, short rail systems that come in handy in pocket pool, particularly when you're playing position. And you know the first rail you're going to hit is a short rail, and you got to go down the table. Where do you want to end up? If you're going to kick at a ball that way, which side of the ball you want to hit? These systems, you look them up, and for me, I'd look them up, I'd read them, I wouldn't understand them, and I'd have to go talk to somebody that understood them. Then they'd explain it to me, then I would practice it, I wouldn't understand it, and then I'd have to go ask somebody else and reread it again. And about the fourth time or fifth time through, all of a sudden the light bulb would come on and I would get it. And then I would shortcut it. I would take the numbers in reverse, possibly, and figure them out, or sideways, something that worked for me. And I think we all can do that in our spare time. Pool players can do that. Look up this material. So yeah, systems. I'm all about that. While we can't play.
All right, Jennifer.
My next item. I mean, this is a super obvious one. Watch pool matches, but don't just put them on. Like this is what people don't do when they watch pool matches. You have to watch with a purpose and watch with a certain intensity. So when you watch a pool match, and you see a player about to take a shot, and you're like, what's he going to do here? Just pause it and think about what you would do, and then watch what the player does. And then when you see what they do, just go back in your mind and think like, well, this is what I would have done. Why did he do it this way? He must have had a reason. And try to learn, these little differences between what you're doing and what they're doing. And it makes a huge difference.
For sure. And this was one of mine as well. And what I was going to say is do this to when Jeremy Jones is commentating, because Jeremy Jones does break the game down. Yes. In such an easy way to understand for, the average to even lower quality pool player that doesn't necessarily, and I'm guilty of this. I use kind of lingo and terminology that is generally for more advanced players. They kind of can keep up with what I'm saying. You'd almost have to be a better player to understand some of the things that I say, because I don't necessarily break it down into really simple terms, where Jeremy is so good at doing that on the fly, and it's just built it into his commentating. So not only are you going to be able to see what the player does, you're also going to get Jeremy Jones's opinion too, as far as why he thinks the player is doing it or why he would do it a different way.
Yeah, and as far as knowledge goes, Jeremy Jones is one of the most knowledgeable players out there, along with, to me, being the best commentator in pool in the history of pool.
I agree with
that. To me, that's my opinion.
He makes the game very entertaining, as well as you learn a ton by listening to him.
Yeah, you do.
Well, I think he speaks to all levels of play. He can break it down, make it simple for maybe somebody watching that hasn't watched a lot of pool, or for the advanced players, he gets into the thinking part of what what's going through the player's head. And that's, we want nothing going through our heads really, but except execution.
Yep. So I can go next. And so this is going to be exceptionally important when you are doing basically stuff that we just talked about, watching pool videos. Do not just say it in your head. There are a ton different articles out there and different research that has been done that shows that when you say something in your head and then you turn out to be wrong, your mind is really, really, really good at justifying away, well, yeah, that was my second guess, or yeah, that's what I really meant. Your mind is incredibly good at doing mental gymnastics to make you seem like you were right all along. So it is extremely important when you're watching these videos and you pause the video and you kind of think about what you're doing to actually write it down or type it out. Do something to where you can actually see what your thoughts are, so that when you go and you actually do watch what happens and you're wrong, there's no way that you can do this mental gymnastics that says, oh, well, I was right the whole time, I just worded it differently. There is a ton of research that is done out there that you learn exceptionally faster by actually forcing yourself into making a decision by writing something down than if you just do these mental gymnastics in your head. That's, you know, so that would be my advice. That's going to be my advice. When you're doing stuff like what Jennifer just said, which is a genius thing to do and really probably going to be the most important thing that we say today, make sure that you actually write something down so that you can hold yourself accountable to learning.
I like that a lot. That's a really good idea. And also, you know, when you do write stuff down, it's just more easily accessible, I think, in your brain. You know, you can recall it easier.
For sure.
Yeah. And especially if you see it. Oh, you forgot that, but next, you know, hey, look what I wrote down. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and on top of that, you can always go back to these things. You can maybe this is my point 1A or something like that, where you can actually go back to these things. So this is, I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent, because I did a video last night where I kind of just did a 40-minute long video where I watched Tim DeRuyter's match where he played against Mark Besterbosch. I'm totally pronounced that wrong.
Besterbosch, yeah, I think, yeah.
Yeah, Besterbosch. And they were playing a take what you make 8-ball. I didn't know it was take what you make until afterwards. But basically what I did was I created about a 40-minute long video where I let them break the balls, and then I paused the video, and then I broke down the rack from start to finish, how I would basically look at this rack and how I would decide whether I would take solids or stripes, how I would make the 8-ball, where I would make the 8-ball, how I would deal with trouble along the way. And I did all of these different things. There is video evidence of what I just said. So I can go back to this in a year from now and be like, oh, well, why did I think that way? Or something like that. But the reason why I bring this up is Tim is actually a tiny friend of the podcast. We talk back and forth every now and then on Facebook. And he's going to be joining the podcast at some point in time for a player profile. But he was actually, the reason I chose him was I actually saw that he had joined the video to watch. And that is why I chose his match with Mark, was because I saw he was in the audience. So I decided to use one of his videos. And what happens was when I paused the video, I had never seen this before, but I paused the video and I went through and said, like, I would do this, 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 and this. This is how I would run this rack out. And then later on, I saw in the comments that Tim said exact same pattern that I chose. And in the video, he shot it completely different. He said he was wrong for shooting it that way, which is kind of fun. You know, he is saying that basically he played the pattern wrong, and yeah. He would have played it the exact same way that I did, which made me feel pretty good first off. But
yeah, you would have played it wrong.
Yeah. But
and got out too.
Yeah. Right. But it allows you to basically go back in time a year and a half from now, which was, I think, that about a time that this has been since he played this match, and say, well, yeah, my thought process was wrong there. This is a better way of doing it, and this is why. So it allows you to be accountable to yourself in years down the line, so you can see your progress along the way.
Cool.
Yeah. I got a question for you, Jennifer. Just your opinion on this. If you're just starting out, learning how to play pool, banging the balls around, and somebody says, well, this is the best game to play to learn how to play pool, I'm going to go ahead and just ask you that. There's other methods you can do to teach pool and stuff like that, but just a game. You want to play a game. Do you think a better game is like 9-ball, rotation-style game, or 8-ball where you have options? or where you don't have an option. I mean, there's two real, those are hardcore differences between those two games. Every shot in eight ball until the end of the game, you have options, and you don't have any, basically, in rotation.
Yeah, well, I think that the funniest thing about eight ball is that it's the greatest beginner game, and it's probably the greatest professional game. You know what I mean? It's like easy for beginners, and it's like really, there's so much more going on than just the fact that you have all these balls and you can choose them, you know, as they are. So I think for beginners, eight ball is the right game because they have a whole bunch of different choices. But also, it's such a tough game, and there's so many different moves, and so it's also great for really high level players. So it's kind of funny that way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know they have a lot of fun in Duluth when they play that tournament up there with Take What You Make. You know, Efren showed up there. I think Jeremy Jones was there last year.
Yeah.
Branching off of that question, Jennifer, do you play any one pocket?
I have been wanting to learn one pocket. I have not done it. I don't want to just learn from anyone, and I know it's going to take a lot of time, and I just don't have a lot of time to learn a new game, but yeah, I'm going to learn it for sure.
Because I would say eight ball is kind of the perfect beginner game, and I agree with everything that you said, because it is kind of, I kind of look at maybe nine ball and 10 ball as kind of being checkers, and you just have to basically execute things, but there's not a ton of thinking or a ton of execution, really. It's just, well, the execution, but there's not a lot of, there's usually maybe two, maybe three paths for each ball, but one's kind of the obvious one. Eight ball, there's definitely a significantly more complex. It's probably like playing chess. And then I would consider one pocket like 3D chess. I mean, it's such a complicated game.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to learning it, actually. I have a lot of the qualities, I think, that would make me a good one-pocket player, one of them being patience. I have a lot of patience. You know what I mean? I'm not going to be, like, reckless.
And you don't miss banks.
Ever. Sorry. No, ever. Not ever. I don't ever miss. I know I do. I practice my bands. My bands are good.
Yeah. All right, Rob, you're up next.
Okay, what do we want here? Okay, we talked about, not having access to a table. Well, I don't know about that, actually. I mean, this social distancing is fine, but pool can be one-on-one, and you can stay 4 or 5 feet away from your opponent if you want. But I think pool players know people that have tables, and you can reach out to them, maybe in this time of need for us pool players to go and get together and play. There's a lot of folks that have, different types of tables in their homes. And so that was going to be a suggestion for me, you don't want to call the player that's got the virus and go over and play with them, but you know what I'm saying, that kind of thing. And then the videos, books, and all that kind of stuff. But I was going to suggest take this time. If you have, for a while in pool, things bothered me that were exterior to the game. And I had to get through that. I was having a hard time playing because sounds, noises, people, distraction, everything that was going on around the table was even other players on other tables hitting balls. It started to bother me. So I made a tape, and you can do this yourself at home. You can tape, a voice, your own voice, talking to you. Like you're talking to yourself, and have it be, mine was a hypnotic type of a mild hypnotic state it would induce in me. And then, of course, when I got on the table, different things I did on the table would trigger that. I built that into the tape. And that seemed to really work for me at that time. And I know all players at some point in time suffer from some type of distractive thing going on, whether it's how the stick feels, whether it's a piece of clothing you're wearing or, the music that's playing or something. I mean, it always seems to be we're so complicated and complex as people, and we got to dumb this down a little bit within ourselves to play the game. Unless, of course, you're playing one pocket. But that's kind of the stuff that I think we can do this without going and playing the game. And you're at home, make the tape. Help yourself. Self-help is what it is.
Helping yourself getting into the right mindset.
Yeah, kind of. Because we know, you know, once you know how to pocket that straight in shot, it's really the rest of it is pretty mental.
Yep. Jennifer, would you like to take it away again?
Yes, I would love to. So I'm going to actually combine two that I wrote down because I think that I've done this and it really goes well together. So, you know, you're cooped up in the house, whatever, you know, fitness is really important and it's an important part of playing any sport, even ones that aren't athletic like pool. So it's important that you keep your blood flowing, that you stay in shape. You know, maybe you can go out for a run if you're allowed to go out. I mean, I don't know how much longer we're going to be allowed to even go out, but if not, you can, you know, do something in your living room. And the other one is visualization of pool. So, you know, visualizing yourself running out, visualizing your mechanics, visualizing, you know, the patterns that you play, the decisions that you make, almost like a whole match going on in your head. Visualize yourself overcoming when you feel like you're going to miss a shot and, you know, catching yourself and making yourself make it and things like this. So if you visualize while you're running or visualize while you're working out, I feel like it's even more powerful because sometimes while you're working out, you want to stop and you want to quit. And it sort of helps you with pool when you're visualizing pool and not letting yourself quit while you're doing your fitness thing. And it sort of makes you tougher, if that makes sense.
Well, I think it does make a lot of sense. I think if you want to succeed at anything, you got to be a little tougher. We got to be tougher. And if it's being tougher physically, that's certainly part of the physical and mental thing. Get tough both ways, but you got to be a good pool player. I mean, pretty darn good professional level. You got to be tough.
Yeah, and there's a big correlation between mental and physical fitness. I should say physical fitness and mental fitness, in that order, not vice versa. When you work out and you keep your body healthy, your mind follows along with it. I mean, we're going back to studies, but there have been millions of studies where people who, right after they're done exercising, they have a release of endorphins and they feel good. I mean, they mentally feel good. And it's the same way with, you know, it's the same way when you're playing pool. I mean, when you have a good match, you release endorphins, you feel good. If you can start doing some sort of training to where when you have exactly what you're saying, you're getting your exercise in, you're feeling good, and then you're visualizing all of these things along the way. You're training your mind basically to feel good when you're playing pool and when you're thinking about playing pool, which is going to help your game.
And to push yourself, you know, because you're pushing yourself while you're visualizing this. So it's like, you know, it's just, I don't know. I do this a lot where I'm working out and I want to quit and I'm like visualizing pool and I'm like, don't quit. So I'm not quitting with working out. I'm not quitting with pool. Like, and it's sort of like this, I'm programming myself to be mentally tougher and physically tougher.
Yeah. So I can take it away from here. I did have that as well as really spend a lot of time just meditating, doing whatever you need to do. Really focus on visualize your arm swinging, visualize staying down on your shots, visualize watching the ball fall in the hole. And that's kind of to the heart of what you were saying there while doing that exercise. But visualize yourself having success in pool because there are a lot of, again, studies that show that if you're able to visualize these things, it goes a long way into actually making it happen. So that is one that I had written down too. But so I will say the next one is there are a lot of people that struggle, and this might strike home with a lot of the listeners here. They find themselves playing eight ball, running down to the eight ball, or maybe the ball before the eight ball, and kind of messing it up, and then missing a ball, or maybe scratching, or hooking yourself trying to get onto the eight ball, something like that, and. For one, I mean that's a normal thing because that's you're kind of getting down to eight ball, nine ball at that point in time where or nine ball or ten ball where you literally are playing positioning from one ball to another ball. There's no bailout balls if you come up short or go a little long to bail you out like there is normally in eight ball. So you actually do have to play perfect positioning for two balls, at least two balls, every single eight ball run out. So of course, naturally, if you're playing positioning on one ball with a bunch of potential blockers out there, it's going to be harder. So that is a huge, huge, huge deterrent to a lot of people's games in eight ball at the amateur level. One thing that you can do to deter that is playing better patterns. And since this is the hardest part, I know we already talked about watching YouTube videos, but you could also just watch 8-ball videos, and don't even, it's not really important what the rack ends up as. It's let the players break the balls and look at where the 8-ball is and find out exactly which ball you would take, stripes or solids, and then how you would get onto that 8-ball. Which of the last balls that you decide to take would you use to make basically a stop shot onto your 8-ball? Because you don't want to have your last ball playing position onto the 8-ball, traveling three cushions. That's a recipe for hooking yourself, scratching, contacting a ball along the way, and getting hooked. So
suicide 8-ball, I call it.
Yeah, so the last ball that you shoot at should be a stop shot or a very, very safe 5-6-7-inch roll straight ahead, something like that, to where you're not putting yourself in danger of getting hooked. It should be a very, very simple routine from your last ball to the 8-ball. And sometimes that means the second to last ball onto your last ball till you can guarantee that is an easy transition. So that would be my advice, is just watch 8-ball videos and find out exactly how to get onto your 8-ball given your last ball in the safest way possible.
I actually do the whole rack that way. I start with the 8-ball and then go to the ball before the 8-ball, and just before I'll even make a ball an 8-ball, I want all my balls on the table until I have that run out, and I'll just work backwards and find out exactly how that run out is going to go.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
what Jimmy Wetsch does that in 8-ball.
Yeah.
He goes all the way, starts from the last and goes back each ball. You can watch him do it in his mind while he's counting the balls.
Yeah.
And he runs out every time.
I used to try to do that as well.
Yeah, I don't do that.
Kind of when I was like basically 550 to like 600 Fargo, I tried to do that. And what I found was I never had good enough control of the cue ball to be able to actually do that. So while I visualized it in my head and I could see it, I just basically ended up getting myself hooked, or I had to, you know, transition the second ball at best, maybe, you know, at best, maybe the third ball. And the pattern that I saw, I could never stick with. So the way that I do it now is I do the 8-ball, where's it's going to go? Where's the 8-ball going to go? Where's the ball to get onto the 8-ball? And then where's that ball to get onto the other ball? And then I'd say, which is the first ball and how do I use that first ball to get on any trouble that I have? And then I kind of use the middle balls in between, just kind of as, you know, I'm not really, I have an ideal path to get through them, but I don't hold myself to that. And that's just a mental thing for me, is because I found myself like not being able to execute in my mind exactly what I saw. And it was just a frustrating thing for me at that level.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I mean, even to this day, I'll plan my pattern and it doesn't always work out that way. But it is good to, you know, at least try to have a plan, and then, cause you hold yourself to a higher standard that way, you know, when you really try to play pinpoint position, even if you can't do it, and you have to reevaluate. So you get out of line and then you have to reevaluate and do it all over again. I think that's mm-hmm. good training for any level of player.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so Rob, would you like to go last? Let's.
I have three books, so you can jot these down, listeners. And they're The Courage to Change. The other one is Hope for Today. And the third one is One Day at a Time. And you can apply this to pool. And I'll just read you a little excerpt from this was One Day at a Time. And it's One Day at a Time in Al-Anon, but pretend we're talking about pool. It's today's reminder. The bad moments will pass if I do not blow them up into tragedies. An old popular song says, pick yourself up, dust yourself off, start all over again. Al-Anon thinking can help me accept these shocks with equanimity and send me on my way to a better tomorrow. You apply that to a pool table because not everything goes according to plan. Especially if we're just learning. Fortunately for us, as we got more along in our careers, that didn't happen as often. So it's more fun. Everybody out there listening, when you're learning how to play, the better you get, the more fun it is. Okay? Harder it is to take the little, tragedies, according to this, right? And here's a quote from, Thomas Merton's, book No Man Is an Island, that says, to make good choices, I must develop a mature and prudent understanding of myself that will reveal to me real motives and intentions. So when you're thinking and when you're reading these types of books and you apply them to pool, they have to help you. there's no choice there, because they're so positive in their self-help. Of course, these are for the loved ones of people who are, you know, alcoholics and drug addicts, but it certainly works for Poole, all three of these books.
Poole right. is certainly an addiction, so.
Yeah. Isn't it?
Yes.
Isn't it? Doesn't it feel that way sometimes?
It certainly
you just hate
does.
It, and you wake up in the morning and you can't wait to do it.
Yeah. And some people have ruined their lives. It's perfect. It's, yeah.
yeah. Yeah, let's go right. to Poole yeah. and ruin our lives. Oh, my God.
So
okay, so I have another good one. Can I do mine?
Absolutely. Yeah. We still need a 10th.
Okay.
So this will be number 10.
Okay. Number 10, but I have one more after that. So maybe, can I do two?
Fine.
I'm an overachiever. I came up with, with seven of them. So, okay. So, you know, we all have like a kitchen table, right? That's a table. You can put, if you have your cues at home, or if you don't, you can use maybe like a broom handle or just something and put a line on your table, whether it's a tape measure or something that's straight, and just practice with a cue, setting your feet and walking into that line and getting your cue to go onto that line to where when you get down, you're stroking and you're going straight over the line. Your cue's not going off to the left, going off to the right, and just keep doing that over and over. So you're basically figuring out where your feet need to be to get your cue on that perfect line.
Mm-hmm.
And they're probably videos. I bet they're like snooker videos.
Well, that's a little bit of CTE work in there.
Oh, I don't know anything about that.
That's a little bit,
I'll take
Jennifer. That's kind of, no, it is. It's a little bit of it. It's like half of it.
Oh, okay.
And and you could also do the, and this is kind of a, I've always kind of looked at this as kind of a silly thing, but in desperate times calls for desperate measures, you could also take a 2-liter Coke bottle and, you know, stroke into the Coke bottle.
Stroke into it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But I think that stroking into a Coke bottle is good. But I think that, you know, you really want to get your eye, like your eye line over that line, that straight line, and get your cue on it. Because that's really where the consistency comes from. And yeah, stroking into a bottle is good too. You don't want to hit the sides of it and stuff like that. That's probably, you could do both of those things.
I think
you could have a good practice by doing that, Jennifer, and standing back, getting down on that line, and just every now and then just shooting. Don't even take the stick back once and go forward and see where you are.
Yeah.
And work it, and you know, work that so that sometime maybe you, all you got to do is get down, poke the stick, and you're there.
So exactly. And one other thing too, you can set up your phone behind you to check your arm. Make sure your arm is up and down, you know, take
right.
video of yourself doing this. If you can get your arm like straight up and down, it really helps going straight through the ball.
Yeah. I don't know how the guys do it. You watch James Aranis's arm. It's 30 degrees cocked inside.
And yeah. A lot of people are like,
yeah, that. They're like that. And he doesn't stroke that straight, but he hits the ball pretty good.
Yeah, but I mean, when you think about how many balls he's probably hit, what age he started,
exactly.
you know, we don't really have that luxury. So
right.
it's better to just have really good mechanics.
You know, yes. Let me ask you this now, because I've noticed this over the years. I watch mechanics a lot, and I've noticed the women's mechanics versus the men's mechanics. The majority of the best women players are mechanically, seems to be, to me, more sound to that. From that elbow to that stick is vertical, up straight up and down. It is perpendicular to the table, to the floor. That wrist is pretty straight. You know, there's that stroke back and forth is dead on straight. And I don't know if it's these guys develop these little quirks and the ladies, you know, develop the way they should have. They just said, okay, we're going to do it the way we should.
I think women might be a little more process oriented, where guys are just like, I'm just going to make this ball. And they
this is okay. No, I got you there. No, that very well could be. Yeah. And besides the ego personal thing.
Yeah,
hey, this is the way I do it, and I can beat you. You can go ahead and stroke straight. I'll beat you stroking crooked.
I think the women are more
successful. That's what Johnny Kramer told me one time.
Yeah. And hours spent in the pool room. I think that women, you know, they tend to start later. They spend less hours there. You know, I've never really heard of a woman who grew up in a pool hall the way some of these top men have, especially the ones with the really goofy mechanics.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's a good answer. Yeah. I didn't think of that.
And then I had one more. This is a kind of an obvious one, but it's such a good one because if you are home, you can learn so many different things with DVDs. You know, there's so many instructional DVDs out there, kicking systems, banking systems, racking patterns, like, you know, so many great DVDs. You can order them on Amazon. Some of them might be available for a fee for, you know, streaming. I mean, you just have so many options now and there's so much to learn. There's always more to learn.
There's a lot of free ones out there.
A lot of free ones.
Yeah.
But
I agree.
Yeah. One of my favorites, like 0X is amazing. If you want to learn like one rail kicking, I think he does a little two rail and three rail as well. But the one rail system is amazing. And then Joe Tucker's Racking Secrets is incredible. There are just so many. I mean,
yeah.
Whatever you want to learn, it's out there.
Yeah. So that would be your bonus. And I'm going to give one bonus one too. Just keep in mind that this is going to pass. It might take a month. It might take 2 months. It might take 6 months. I don't know. Maybe it'll take 2 years. But eventually this will pass. Try if you can. And of course, I've been saying this a lot lately, but if you are financially able to swing it, this is going to pass for the players, but it might not pass for the actual pool hall owners. Rent is still going to come due. You're going to have no income. They still have to, you know, they still have to pay their utilities, all that stuff. While this might be done in 6 months, you might not have a pool hall to go back to. And then you're stuck in the same exact spot you're in right now where you have nowhere to go play pool. So again, if you have the financial ability to do so, head down to your local pool hall or contact your local pool hall owner and try and get a gift card. Or, you know, maybe if they're still doing carry out for food, go down and buy food. That's what I've been doing at The Rock in Madison, Wisconsin. I've been going down to The Rock and trying to order food 2 to 3 times a week from them. Buy your gift cards. You're going to spend the money anyways. Just do it ahead of time and then, you know, help them out to keep the doors open. It might make the difference between them deciding that they have to shut down and them deciding that they have enough that they can survive this storm just like we all are as well. So that would be the last thing that I'll say as far as, you know, this 3 months or whatever that this is going to last. It might last even longer if you have nowhere to go to when it's done. So, and maybe as a pool hall owner yourself, you would agree with that, Jennifer.
I definitely agree with that. It's, you know, if you don't have any reserve while this is going on, you can find yourself in a lot of trouble when things are ready to start again.
For sure. So I think with that, unless there's anything else that either of you have to say to wrap this up.
Okay, well, we did all that we can do for everybody out there. You folks listening?
Well, I will thank you again for coming on and joining us, Jennifer. This was kind of last second, and you were a great sport about coming in. No questions asked. So thank you so much for doing that.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for inviting me.
What's it like out there in Brooklyn now on Sunday night? Weather-wise,
it's 40 degrees, empty streets.
Ghost town is 40.
Everybody's sheltering in place. Yeah, basically.
Yeah. So people are doing what they're supposed to be doing then.
Mostly, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again, Jennifer. And
Jennifer, thanks. This was fun.
Thank you so much. Thanks for coming to my party. Now that we're all out to grow, it's time to go home.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you like what you've heard and you listen through iTunes, please subscribe and leave a rating. It helps others find the podcast. As always, thank you to our sponsors, Jacoby Custom Cues, Cody's Q Therapy, Jeff Glaz's CBD for Life Global, the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame, The Rock's Sports Bar and Grill, the IQ Practice Cue Ball, and the Wisconsin Pool Player Society. If you like what you hear, consider supporting the people who support the podcast. I would also like to take this time to thank Matt Kitzman, Robert Miller, Natasha, Kurt Elliott, Scott Doolian, Corey Smith, William Sutherland, and Mike Teasy for their help to market the podcast to a larger audience. Lastly, I would like to thank my cousin Andrew Mindham for his band Hey Captain Knight's music as segment and filler music to the podcast. If you like what you hear, you can find all of his music at heycaptainknight.bandcamp.com. And Knight is KNIGHT.